Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the sixth day, Tes B'Tammuz, Tavshin Ayin Hey, Pasha Chukas, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 25 June 2015, webcasting from the land of Israel, land of truth that liars can't stand. Well, in a follow-up to the last webcast and this week's UNHRC so-called report, more has come out, thanks to Anne Bayevsky. On this Mary McGowan Davis woman. It seems she had previously chaired a committee for this Spanish Inquisition-like council passing judgment on Jews in 2008 and 2009, Israel strike into Gaza. A report was issued in 2011 ruling that Israel's legal system did not meet standards of independence or impartiality or make accountability possible. In that same report of March 2011, she also judged Israel's primary target, its enemy in Gaza, Hamas, to be, quote, generally tolerant of local human rights organizations, close quote. You know, the hundreds of anti-Jew NGOs there, funded by anti-Jew Europeans, the same Hamas known for taking power by throwing rivals off rooftops. The current McGowan report also claims that Israel, quote, directing tactic attacks against civilians and acted in utter disregard of the civilian population, close quote. This is contrary to Israel's panel of true military experts, generals from abroad, men like Richard Kemp, the former British commander of forces in Afghanistan, who said, no army is so careful of enemy civilians. Who to believe? Bayevsky also reminded us that the UNHRC ordered up this investigation a mere 16 days into the operation last summer, which included a condemnation of violations arising from Israel's military operations. You got that? They rule that Israel is guilty, then they call for an investigation. First you pronounce the verdict, then you call for a trial. This, by the way, is very third world thinking. The word trial in English is virtually drawn from science, to try to test a hypothesis that so-and-so is guilty of some crime, versus the courtroom behavior in third world countries where a trial is an arena in which you smear the already presumed guilty with contempt. Think of the expression show trials. This fits this woman's insistence that Hamas and friends are not terrorists, but just, quote, armed groups. Above all, this investigation, so-called, was charged with studying events that began on June 13th of last spring, through the 50 days of missile attacks. What had happened the day before on June 12th was deleted from history, you know, the spark for the violence, the kidnapping and murder of three Jewish boys. The report, according to one news account, never provides the context for this 50 days of violence, the history up to June 13th. It also never mentions the 12 years of rocket attacks out of Gaza, tens of thousands of projectiles fired at us, everyone an attempted murder. In addition to Anne Bayevsky, in the J-Post today, Gerald Steinberg of NGO Monitor reported that one of the four experts referenced in McGowan's report is Dr. Mads Gilbert, the notorious Norwegian physician who has worked in Gaza for years and blamed U.S. policy in the Middle East for 9/11. Gilbert was one of the five signatories to an anti-Israel letter published last summer during the fighting in the British medical magazine Lancet. Two of the other signatories were known promoters of an anti-Semitic video produced by David Duke, the former head of the KKK. This is one of the experts for Ms. McGowan, Dr. McGowan, whatever she is. In this UNHRC report, Amnesty International's version of events is quoted 53 times. Human Rights Watch, that's backed by George Soros, quoted 22 times. B'Tselem, our own homegrown Jewish anti-Jews, are quoted 69 times. Official Israel has, of course, as reported last webcast, responded indignantly, though none to my knowledge have its leaders said this is just that vinegary old fashions anti-Semitism in new bottles. And regard to a point made to me before, this obsessive focus on Israel by the UNHRC is an offense not only against Israel, but all other victims of this kind of sick Muslim violence, such as the suffering of Christians all over Islam, and especially in the Middle East these days, suffering the tortures of the damned at the hands of these Muslim monsters. It's been a year now since the entire community of Assyrian Christians in Mosul had to flee for their lives and leave behind 100% of their immovable property. It was that or be forced to convert to Islam or risk being killed for refusing. Last week, Memory.org covered a recent ISIS attack on some other Assyrian Christian communities in northeastern Syria, during which 232 of them were kidnapped, 51 children, 84 women among them, with ISIS demanding $22 million for their freedom. And as always, with yours truly, this calls to mind the legendary Barbary Pirates, whose principal livelihood was kidnapping for money and abusing their captives as slaves until ransomed. It may be this inhuman tradition of kidnapping like this which prompted the sages of the Jewish people at home all their lives in this region to interpret the commandment in the Ten Commandments, don't steal, to refer to kidnapping, not common theft. And yesterday we read and saw photos of two boys in Syria crucified for not fasting during Ramadan. 2 days ago, ISIS spokesman Abu Muhammad al-Adnani appealed to jihadis in an audio message to escalate their attacks on Christians and to turn Ramadan into a, quote, calamity for the infidels, Shiites and apostate Sunni Muslims fighting against ISIS and collaborating with the U.S. and allied powers. The Middle East has become, and hardly for the first time in its history, a bubbling cauldron of bloody massacres and tortures, kidnapping, slavery, and rape, and the UNHRC preoccupies itself with, quote-unquote, investigating war crimes committed by the most neurotically careful army in the world. This is the face of anti-Semitism in the 21st century. It's a world as dizzy as Lewis Carroll's Wonderland, and made so apparently by a kind of mental disorder, an obsession with the Jews that disorders clear-headed thinking. We saw an example of that 4 years ago, when the current round of horrors began in Araby, in the reportage of LTF, little Tommy Friedman, who saw an Arab Spring, a flowering of democracy. Borrowing from the famous expression from 1848, the Spring of Nations, as the rebellions in Europe at that time by peoples under the thumb of the Austro-Hungarian Empire were called, LTF was starry-eyed with admiration and hope for the democratic upheaval, especially in Egypt, by all those budding Jeffersonian liberals who turned out in the end to be Muslim Brotherhood lunatics. Friedman is one of the dopiest of Middle East analysts, he who majored in the field at Brandeis and ended a year or two in England, and that is so because he's a Jewish anti-Jew. Because in his eyes, the Jews are the bad guys here. He cannot see the Arabs and the Muslims for who they really are. This anti-Jewitis blurs his vision every time. So this latest UNHRC report is not only an anti-Semitic attack on the world's only Jewish state, it is directly an abandonment of hundreds of thousands of Christians in the region to the barbaric tyranny of maniacal Muslim murderers. You know, like the Headchippers, and now this latest video of putting people in a cage and then lowering it into a pool of water slowly to drown them. These Muslims are one sick community of men, as evil as the 9/11 sky devils. Islam is at war with civilization, and tragically has the United Nations organization under its thumb. The U.S. has been UN has been kidnapped, hijacked by Islam. Some 30% of its countries are officially Muslim. So no wonder it runs and finances such Spanish Inquisition-type tribunals as the UNHRC investigation of us. We can only hope and pray that if the world is still standing when Obama leaves office, the next president will face this truth and declare war on militant Islam in order to save the U.S., save Israel, and the West from these barbarians. That was Psalm 121. Last segment ended with the reference to Obama, the subject of Michael Oren's new book. And what gets my attention is not only his reportage, leastwise what has appeared in his promotional op-eds, but the reaction of the IBJs, the Inside the Beltway Jews. And they are pathetic. It's like my book cover. I don't think I mentioned on the webcast that I had to change it. It's an interesting phenomenon. The original cover is my idea executed by the brilliantly gifted illustrator Gadi Pollack, a refugee from the Soviet Union who became Haredi. He illustrates children's books, and for my money, he's far more than an illustrator. He's an amazing artist. I described to him what I wanted, and he got it right away. The portrait of Arafat as a grinning monster. Against the backdrop of the Dome of the Rock, because his ancient Palestinian freedom fighter character was just a ruse. He was as much of a Muslim lunatic as Osama bin Laden. Anyway, I discovered that people here in Israel love the cover. versus Jews in the diaspora who hate it, even pro-Israel national religious Jews. And since the diaspora, the exile, is my primary market, I have substituted a new, different cover. In a similar vein, I watch American Jews like Abe Foxman and now Douglas Bloomfield, formerly with AIPAC, who opined today in J-Post against Michael Oren's portrait of Obama and his deliberate acts of hostility to Israel. Bloomfield and Foxman and their ilk of IBJs, these Inside the Beltway Jews, ultimately makes me feel sorry for them while making a living formally opining on Israel and its rights. They remain Americans whose career and respected place in fashionable circles is far more important to them than the lives of us Jews living here. With the consequences of Obama's decisions and acts far from them, Bloomfield today praised Foxman for dismissing Oren's conspiracy theories. And his reference to Obama's Muslim heritage, Foxman urged Oren to, quote, walk back his unjustified attacks on Obama, such as stating that from day one Obama's agenda was championing the Palestinian cause and a nuclear accord with Iran, close quote. And I ask, what's wrong with that? In January 2009, the U.S. was in the throes of its worst economic crisis since the Great Depression. Obama takes office, and his first telephone call as president is the Holocaust-denying Muslim terrorist Abu Mazen. How was Michael Oren supposed to interpret that behavior? Bloomfield, in his own hysterical Thomas Friedman-esque need to broadcast his loyalty to his president versus the Prime Minister of Israel, wrote, quote, who can forget Netanyahu's persistent meddling in partisan U.S. politics, his endorsement of Mitt Romney, his congressional speech attacking Obama's Iran policy, and his rude Oval Office lecture on live television for a lesson in Mideast history, close quote. This guy's a real jackass. I don't recall Bibi ever endorsing Mitt Romney. He complains, that Bloomfield does, about Bibi's persistent meddling in U.S. domestic politics, which is different what than Obama coming here and addressing a handpicked audience of leftist students to urge them to oppose their prime minister's leadership. And as for Bibi's congressional speech attacking Obama's Iran policy, Bibi was invited by the Congress of the United States, who gave him a rousing welcome and applauded his views on Iran versus Obama's views. Obamas are leading to Iran obtaining a nuclear bomb, which the Iranians publicly expressed they want to use to destroy Israel, God forbid, and Bloomfield protests Netanyahu's opposition to Obama's policy and behavior. And as for Bibi's allegedly rude lecture on Mideast history, does Bloomfield really believe Obama knows this history better than Bibi? Worse, he omitted the context. Bibi was responding to Obama's knife in the back, his adoption, surprise adoption, of the Arab demand that is a return to the 1948 ceasefire lines, which is a rejection of the UN Security Council Resolution 242, which does not call for that. It calls for new lines. Much of my book records the constant rejection over decades of Resolution 242 by the Arabs because it made no reference to Palestinians and their alleged right to a state. As Abu Mazen's Holocaust denial is a perverse rewriting of history, so has been the invention of the Palestinians by him. They really are two sides of the same coin. For my money, I thought Bibi's lecture in the Oval Office was much too tame, given the gravity of the offense. And no less offensive in Bloomfield's eyes is Oren's attitude to the American Jews surrounding Obama, Jews like Bloomfield himself. Michael Oren rightly noted that they are non-Orthodox, he himself was not religious, intermarried, and liberal, working inside the Obama administration, and Oren sees them as having, quote, a hard time understanding Israel's character. And for this reason, Michael Oren suggests that Israel can no longer count on American Jews. Oren also says such American Jews are, quote, disproportionately represented in the U.S. media, and are largely responsible for American media's anti-Israel coverage, close quote. Bravo Michael Oren. For sure, Bloomfield would end his op-ed, his opposition to Oren's opinion, this way, although I heartily concur with Oren's opinion. If not for LTF and Roger Cohen and Jeffrey Goldberg and the State Department Jew boys and the, those at National Public Radio, including the current ambassador to Israel, Daniel Shapiro, who demanded an apology for Oren's book, the American mainstream media might be less hostile. Oren is right on target. With 80% of American Jews voting for Obama twice, they're like the 80% the sages told us who refused to leave Egypt on the night of the Exodus. Of course, Douglas Bloomfield must chastise Michael Oren. And I look forward, if we ever get it, to the reaction of Alan Dershowitz, one of those American Jews who twice voted for Obama. So far, in the matter of Michael Oren's book, Counselor Dershowitz maintains radio silence.
Tvayim, tvayim yafim me'od, tvayim mechorim v'chama tmunot. Yesh po shirim shemitnagnim bareka, chi yodim leta'er meifo ata bata, leze sof ata chozer. המון התרגשויות רחות נגיעות כפרות התהייה האם יכל להיות אחרת או שזה פשוט ככה זה צריך לקרות אין לזה צורה אהובים שנעים כמו סרט בתוך העיניים קצת כאב למזכרת איזה לקח או שניים שקרים וחילות ידידות ובדידות ועוד קווים מלא
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. On the home front, that is the northern front, a top story this past week has been the plight of the Druze in Syria and the reaction of the two Druze communities we have here, especially in light of Monday night's savage attack on the Golan Heights by a mob of Druze that wrecked an IDF ambulance carrying two victims of the fighting in Syria to hospital and brutalized the wounded inside to the point of beating one of them to death. And all apparently due to the rumor that the IDF was transporting Nusra Front guys, that's the local Al-Qaeda franchise in Syria. The gunman responsible for the massacre of like 10 Syrian Druze a week ago. The talk this week here has been about the desire, the need, and a responsibility to defend the Druze in Syria, protect them, in light of the fact that the Druze in Israel have been such faithful partners in defending the state. I think last Friday, Caroline Glick posted another emotional piece calling for such assistance, though by midweek, the Prime Minister had met with the head of the Druze community here, Sheikh Mawfaq Tarif, and it turns out our Druze are not in such a hurry to see the IDF go into action in Syria for their fellow Druze there. And not only Sheikh Tarif, but Imad Fares, Brigadier General Fares, an honored Druze, commando, leader of a brigade. He was in Ma'ariv yesterday declaring that the Syrian Druze don't want Israel's help, and he knows that community well. And not surprisingly, the Prime Minister yesterday told the Sheikh and his entourage that Israel would not be inserting itself into the regional anarchy, and the Druze leaders were reported to be comfortable with that. First of all, the Druze in Syria may be in less danger than some think, but above all, given the peculiar nature of this community's behavior, the functionally religious doctrine that you are loyal to your government, whatever it is, the Druze in Syria are as loyal to Assad Jr. as Israelis are loyal to Israel. They have grown up hating Israel because that is the national ethos, and they would not want to be caught dead being helped by Israel. And as for the abomination of last Sunday night, when a mob of Druze on the Golan attacked this IDF ambulance, wrecked it, murdered one of the wounded Syrians inside, who were not Nusra Front, the Prime Minister was absolutely clear, and the Sheikh in total agreement with him, that the perpetrators were going to be brought to justice. There's no excuse for attacking the IDF, for taking the law into their hands. And as for the overarching morality of that riot, the Sheikh also said this was no reflection of proper Druze behavior. And that's what I had in mind before when referring to the two Druze communities in Israel. Those in the Galilee, who have been there since before 1948, and those on the Golan, who have never surrendered their formal allegiance to Syria, which existed for them from 1948 to 67, and for good reason. Thanks to Israel forever toying with the idea of handing the Golan back to Syria in exchange for a piece of paper with the word Salam written on it in Arabic, the Golan Druze have always entertained the possibility of being returned to Syria, and in that case, they did not want to endanger themselves by becoming pro-Israel. They did not want to endanger their relatives still living in Syria. Well, I, for one, am pleased by the Prime Minister's judgment. There is something like a $2 billion project underway to improve the lives of Israel's Druze, some 140,000 of them, and they deserve every penny of that support. But riding to the rescue of their co-religious in Syria is beyond our obligations, and it's gratifying to see the agreement between the Prime Minister and the Sheikh and the much decorated, and rightly so, Brigadier General Imad Fares.
חסידיה, בלי מזון ומחיה, בביתו עוסק מלבוש ואין בגד ללבוש. גונן בה חשובה אישה, וגם בבנים חמישה, דיברה לו האישה, יותר אין להתייאשה. המי בלי לחם לאכול, בערום ובחוסר כל. בתורה מצאת כי יגעת, מה נאכל מעטה? זהיר כבר נשוק, הלא תצא לשוק, חנון ורחום במרומיו, אולי יגמלנו כרחמיו, טוב לכובב מחסה, רצון ירא אב יעשה. יעצת בדעת ובחוכמה, עצתך בלי להסכימה, קצאתי לבושת ולכלימה, מבלי כסות וסלמה. לאין בידי לפורטה, אפילו שווה פרוטה, מיירה ושלם ישכנים, מלבושים נעים מתוקנים, נלבש וישליך יהבו, על השם אשר אהבו, צחו ילדיו בפילולם, על יש עובדך נחלם. עבר בשוק בסברתו, בני אליהו הנביא לקראתו, פץ לו המבשר, באמת היום תתאשר. צבני בכל כבודך, כי הנני עבדך, קרא למי בדעתו, קנות עבד אין כמותו, רחשך ישנה דינו, עבד למכור את אדונו, שד לו חוכמתו בקיר בו, וחזיק בו כמו רבו. תגר קנאו באבים, בשמונה מאות אלף זהובים, תבעו מה מלאכתך, אם בבניין חוכמתך, תחליט רק לין ופלטרין, הרי אתה בן חורין. יום ראשון במפעלים, פעלים פועלים, שיבה בחצי הלילה, ענני נורא עלילה, יזמתי ונמכרתי להבידי, לכבודך ולא לכבודי, בורא עולם בקניין, השלם השלם זה הבניין, רחמך יחמרו בחנינתי, כי לטוב הכוונתי, מלאכי רחמים עם עונתו, אז החלו לבנותו, רבו בוני ימלוכה, ותשלם כל המלאכה. סוחר בירותו, כי נגמרה מלאכתו, כלולת מגדל עם נעים, כפי עניין הבנעים, ייזכר לך אתה אתמול אשר דיברת, חופשני בוודאי ובבירור, כנעמת לעניין שחרור. זה כמו באמת, זה כמו באמת, זה כמו באמת, ופרח לו איש האמת.
Last item, the Minister of Agriculture, Uri Ariel, said 2 days ago that working for B'Tselem will no longer be considered alternative national service. Israel has a program for Orthodox girls in particular, to do that instead of joining the IDF, and I believe Christians like from the old Soviet Union also take advantage of the program, those with other reasons for not wanting to serve in the IDF. B'Tselem was under the rubric of this exemption, but it is now one of those 10 Israeli NGOs funded from abroad by anti-Jew Jews and anti-Jew non-Jews who collaborated with the anti-Semitic UNHRC. And since Ariel has administrative authority over the National Insurance Institute that administers the alternative service program, he said no more. There was a notice that the Attorney General Yehuda Weinstein overruled him, but Uri Ariel said he will continue to fight to deny B'Tselem and these other groups that privilege. They worked with the UNHRC, and he's thanked for that. You cannot do alternative service to the IDF by smearing the IDF. So good luck, Uri. It's the right thing to do. The Malshanim are a chronic curse on the Jewish people who must be fought and resisted like Amalek in every generation. Not that Yehuda Weinstein knows that. Okay, that's it for this Thursday night, and I'll be back, God willing, after the Holy Sabbath. Until then, Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Eretz Yisrael.